Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Well, I really meant Travis, but I didn't want to put him off the line.
Oh! Off the top rope!
He's wait! Here comes Chris with a steel chair! Oh my God!
He's not getting up!
He also can't defend himself, but he's not getting up!
Love for the Blazing Defender!
I felt the impact of that one, and I'm just an audience.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're Breaking the Panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel. This is your weekly download of the awesome sauce that is the golden day, adamantium age of comic books, man. Yeah, I left DC out, but you know what? They're struggling. They're coming along, but it'll be okay. We all love the comic sauce that we're getting across the board. It's going to be awesome. And now it's going to get a little graphic because I've said sauce three times, and that's going to make Chris giggle. But to introduce my awesome co-host today, to my right is Chris Wisdom, known as Leopard Mask.
Again? Leopard Mask? I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what it means either. You are an archaeologist on a voyage into deepest Africa when one day you discovered your discoveries angered the ancient cat gods. That sounds about right for you. Now you bear the weight of their power until you find a way of appeasing the mighty deities. This is like the best punishment ever. Oh, we hate you, so we're going to give you powers to go be a superhero. What is this?
Yeah, but he's like bombarded by the weight of sleeping cats.
That'd be better than what he got. He got cat transformation. You have the ability to transform yourself into a superpowered leopard with increased strength, speed, and intelligence. And you could use that. You protect Elvisville from gangland violence while also battling the evil plans of the Faceless One. And the dark and ominous voice you heard disparaging Chris Wisdom is Dr. Phenomenal, Paul Klotz.
Chris, are you going to call me Christ?
I was going to call you Chris.
I felt like you were about to anoint me with the most holy of names.
Now, you know what? I could do that if you want to carry it. I'm good at monikers. You are a scientist and implanted a computer chip into your brain to restore your sight, but an unexpected turn of events also gave you unexpected powers. Can you resist the temptation to use your powers for selfish reasons?
No.
I didn't think so. You have super sight. Your eyes have the ability to see across the entire spectrum from thermal imaging to x-rays. You are Geordi LaForge, sir. They also give you the ability to see incredible detail across vast distances. Now you protect Cherryville from litter bugs while also battling the evil plans of Project Janus.
Like Project Janus, like J-A-N-U-S?
Yep. That was it. Like
Giannis, or is it Janice, like Janice down the hall in accounting? Because they're
use your sight.
And her find evil out. Plans to steal your sandwich for lunch.
That one, all right. We'll do something different next week. But here we go. Klotz, what's got you excited in the geek world this week?
Trailers. So, as everybody knows, there was a relatively big deal in the sports ball world over the past weekend.
Rise up!
May have been known as, the superb owl. Superb owl.
The superb owl! That is my hero name.
So Super Bowl Sunday. If you watch the game, you may have noticed that there were some pretty tasty spots in the ad coverage over the course of the game. In particular, Fox's Legion got a lot of commercial spots, like an obscene amount of them, to be fair. Because I feel like it was at least one spot during each hour, and there were a couple of different ones. There was a Guardians of the Galaxy spot. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 spot, I should say. What was the other one, Chris? There was another one that I'm...
I didn't watch, so I couldn't tell you
what?
For sure. I don't watch the Super Bowl. That's not my life.
What?
That's not my life.
I checked the scores on Google. Does that count?
Yeah. Well,
I used to watch it for the commercials, but now I can catch them 5 minutes after they aired.
Well, to be fair, Charles, I kind of felt like as someone who lives in Atlanta, you were kind of obligated to watch the game this year.
So I did listen to it, right? So I was driving for Lyft to get people to and from parties and mm-hmm, whatnot. And so I definitely was following on the radio, but I'm a cord cutter. And when it comes down to that kind of thing, while it can be viewed online, it wasn't for me worth the trouble of kicking my family off of the television to do it because they had no interest in it. So I did follow it on the radios, the radio waves.
I don't watch a lot of week-to-week sports ball, if I'm honest. Like, I maybe watched a game or two all season, if I'm honest.
Yeah, that's Ibbitt. We lost Ibbitt. He was the sports ball guy.
But I am a New England Patriots fan, and so I did watch that game. I actually watched it with one of our faithful listeners and friends of the show, Dr. Usil and his family. And we had a rousing good time because even though he's not a Pats fan, he isn't a Falcons fan either, so he was cheering with me as we watched the greatest comeback possibly in sports history. Maybe not in sports history. That might be a little bit rough.
It was a great game, and the Falcons made the Patriots earn every inch of that
field. Oh, yeah. I mean, great game played by both sides. Even though I'm a Pats fan, going into the halftime show, I did not at all think that I would be happy by the end of the evening, and I... It was glorious. I believe what I posted to Facebook was, tonight we sup on the saltiness of tears. But in any case, the game itself is not really that important. What I really want to talk about here is that there was a lot of great spots during the course of the game for, you know, fandom type stuff. There were a lot of different shows and movies that were plugged. In particular, you know, Legion was plugged heavily because Fox was, you know, hosting the broadcast, and so they got to plug their new show. Also the Guardian spot and a couple other spots. But also just recently, not to be outclassed, Netflix put out the delicious, tasty first trailer for Iron Fist as well. And ooh, is it good? Oh, yeah. Oh, it is so good. Yeah, so...
You know, I gotta say, I haven't heard Klotz that emoticon in a while.
Ooh! Okay. I don't smoke, but I was looking for a pack after that trailer, all right? I was like...
Nice.
I was like, oh, man. Wow. Yeah, no, I'm super excited about Iron Fist based on that trailer. That's Logan. Logan was the other trailer during the Super Bowl that was really exciting. This is a crazy time, guys. There's a lot of really tasty stuff just around the corner.
There was the Stranger Things Season 2 teaser, too.
Hype.
But is that good or bad? I mean, hype can be a negative thing.
No. Charles, in the way young people speak these days, hype is hype is a positive term. Okay,
hype is good, bad.
Yeah,
yeah. Not bad, bad. It's good, bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hype, aka dope, aka amazeballs. Yeah, no. Stranger Things 2, I fist pumped. I was like, yes! Yes! Yes!
Did you see Ego's response on Twitter?
No, what?
Oh my god. So I don't know how they did it, but their response was a picture of Ego's upside down, and even their text in the tweet was upside down. It said, did anybody notice anything odd about that commercial?
That's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah, so super exciting teaser for Stranger Things Season 2. Oh, man. So hyped. Like, beyond excited for that.
So I'm definitely... I am looking forward to Legion from the spots that I have seen. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that it's on FX, which...
Can I be
I'm old school FX. So The Shield, Sons of Anarchy, those dark shows, I like them. So the fact that this is on FX makes me go, "Ooh, I'm ready for a nice dark superhero show." So that's my hope for it. What about
I
you guys?
Can I be honest that based on trailers, I feel like the trailers haven't done a good job demonstrating what the show's supposed to be about.
I get you.
Could you tell me that you have any idea what the hell is about to happen on that show?
I think
no.
No, I don't feel like what they want.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's frantic enough, but I think when you watch trailer A versus trailer B versus trailer C, they're different. And
versus
I think
double D?
Well, and I think it's subtly it's giving you personality trailer A, personality trailer B, personality trailer C versus giving you a little bit of the same in each trailer.
I almost expect it to be almost entirely based in the psychologist's office for at least the first half of the series. But we see the personalities living some memory or something. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm ready to watch.
Okay. I'm not saying that it means that the show is going to be bad. I'm not trying to imply that at all. I'm basically just getting at the fact that those trailers didn't, to me, demonstrate what the hell was going on or like why I should go watch that show. So hopefully the big old X symbol rotating around on the screen at the end of each of those was enough to sell people on it, because I think
now I wonder if the boys over at MCU cast will actually tackle this show. It's not like they're doing much right now. They only have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So
yeah, but they get their peepees smacked every time they go outside the MCU proper by DC on screen.
Yeah, well, they get it from their fans too. But it's like, come on, it's still a Marvel property.
Yeah,
come on. But you're right. I mean, technically, it doesn't quite fit their rigid branding, you know. But Iron Fist. Here's what I hate about trailers on Netflix. I don't get the show today. I want the show today. Why? Oh,
it's only
ready.
A couple weeks, Charles. Gee, yeah,
I know. But come on, I know. And they have to hype. Well, they don't have to, but. In my perfect world, I want that Christmas morning surprise, right? I want to flip on my Netflix tonight and go, oh my God, I didn't even know they were making an Iron Fist. And I can watch it all right now? Maybe we're getting a divorce because I ain't moving for 13 hours.
Well, other than a thinly veiled attempt at a divorce, I don't think that it's such a good strategy to not let people know that your awesome thing's coming out.
No, you're probably right.
Oh, probably? You think
no,
I'm like,
you're
I'm
right,
like,
you're
maybe
right.
Maybe just be right.
This is why I'm not the director of marketing for the company. So
yeah.
No, but I will, as soon as this show is done, I am going to go and watch that trailer. I didn't know it dropped. And we established I didn't watch the Super Bowl, but I am very excited. Something else just came across our Facebook page before we move on to other news. And this is from our good friend Phil over at Botched Podcast, which happens to be the newest member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. And Chris, you brought them on, and they're a great show. Love the show. They're great at promoting the network, because in the middle of their crazy D&D campaign where they're doing horrible things like vomiting in other people's mouths and they're drinking heavily, they'll say something that references Marvel, and they'll go, oh, well, if you like other Marvel stuff, go to MCU cast on Giant Size Team Up Network. So always love to give them a shout out. Phil just shared this for us. I don't know if this is going to get you guys as excited as me. I'm a little bit of an older gamer. I love this franchise like nobody's business. Netflix is working on a Castlevania series. And that if I were a bro like Klotz and fist pumped, that would get a fist pump from me right there. Netflix is working on this Konami franchise. It's supposed to come out later this year. And... However, this might break my heart. They're still in pre-production. They haven't actually, and you know how that goes, right? Sometimes they can make announcements and things change, and then we don't get what we were hoping for. But right now, the first part of the first season expected to be released this year. Writer Warren Ellis, who did Transmetropolitan and Iron Man, has reportedly written the first season, and Adi Shankar, he was a producer on Dread, confirmed that he'll be co-running the series. What do you guys think? Are you excited? Do you love Castlevania? Is this the kind of thing you want to look at, see?
Yeah, I liked Castlevania. I'm excited. I'm going to get Simon Belmont for the first time since Captain N.
Captain N and the Game Masters, man. That was the
It's Captain N the Game Master, but I digress.
Oh, snap!
Oh, the filthiest of casuals.
And extreme emphasis on filthy.
So we've established I had a very sheltered childhood, and I've drank heavily since then. And you know, I got your reference. I know the characters. You could just once let it slide.
Oh, see, this is the satisfying part for me.
But I'm very excited. I have played most of the Castlevania games. The ones that kind of got away from the Belmont family, I didn't really dive into. I did play some of the next gen, the latest gen versions, but those classics, man. It was great stuff. What about you, Klotz? You haven't really said one way or the other.
And I'm not going to.
All right. But that's Simon Belmont and Captain N, right? He was a bit of a metrosexual, right? He was very much a rich kid, bouffant hair. I mean, he was weird.
He was dandy.
Dandy. That's a good word for it. All right, Klotz, you've got a bit of business here. Or business news, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. How to preface this. There's this cool site out there called Seeking Alpha. It's about investments. I don't invest currently, but I've taken interest in the market in the past. You know, it's an interesting topic. One of the things that they do is they track certain topics, and I have them tracking, for me personally, a lot of tech stuff and entertainment stuff. And so this came across our desk, and you'll see the link in the show notes when this goes out, about we kind of knew that Disney had an unannounced streaming deal with someone for a while. And nobody really knew who it was because they were changing up some of their offerings and some of their deals, right?
Well, we know that they do have a deal with Netflix until a certain... I don't know what the time is, but until a certain time because all the big films are coming to Netflix right now.
Right. But basically what this is a call out... basically that it is more the deal is with Google and YouTube, and they're looking to set up a bundled service to launch later this year that'll include ESPN and other ABC TV group networks, according to the Wall Street Journal. So this is a pretty big deal because this could open up some pretty crazy possibilities. I mean, you're talking about the biggest content producer on the planet now coupling with the largest content distribution service on the planet. Because let's be real, YouTube is the monster. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, as I do represent a portion of society, not necessarily the older portion of society.
But not the younger.
But yeah. You're over 30. I don't want to hear it.
Not even the younger older. You're pretty mid-older.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there could be a sports car somewhere in the near future for you, but maybe not.
You know what? I'm gonna tell my wife to plan something for my 40th, or she's already working on stuff. I'm like, all right, plan something for Klotz and Chris to come, and then we'll cancel on them at the last minute.
And then Chris and I will go out and have an actual good time.
Before 4 p.m. when the savings
I am so looking forward to Dragon Con. Chris is going to be here, and I dare say I will outpace you the entire weekend. Everybody is surprised, but I people talk a big game.
You're like four times my size. Of course you're going to outpace
me. I'm just saying. I will. It'll come down tonight. Charles, you'll be ready to crash, and I'm like, yep, I got to work on some more stuff for another hour or two, and then I'm going tomorrow.
Charles likes to get to things early. That's usually when you get the discounted rate. He pulls out his A.
All right, let's back to the subject. So when it comes to YouTube, there's a certain style there. I want to see this latest Disney film, this latest Marvel film, Doctor Strange. Okay, I know it hasn't hit streaming yet, as far as I know. I want to see Doctor Strange. I don't think YouTube, because if I thought YouTube, I'm thinking piracy. When I think YouTube, I think of Good Mythical Morning. These almost live presentation, personality-driven things that go on there, right? We do stuff on YouTube. There are many, many creators on YouTube, but
well,
how are they going to? How do you jump that gap? Of I don't think YouTube. I think Netflix. When I think streaming TV, Klotz, you seem to be tapped into it. What do you think?
Okay, so the thing about YouTube is all it is in essence is literally just a distribution platform for video content. And quite frankly, there's even some not so much video, just content out there. You know what I mean? There's definitely plenty of recordings that are uploaded to YouTube with just a couple title cards. You know what I mean? Particularly music, you know, like music is often uploaded there. The thing is, though, they have been really changing the scope of the service over the last few years, in particular, YouTube Red, where they started reaching out to some of the biggest content producers, such as PewDiePie, such as the Good Mythical Morning guys, Rhett and Link, you know, and a number of other content producers, some of the science and informational, you know, educational content creators and all that stuff. And they've reached out to them, they've partnered with them, and they've created content that is exclusive to YouTube Red, which is a subscription service. So they have started moving a little bit towards what Netflix does. You know what I mean? Whereas they're sponsoring and partnering with content creators for specialized content that they're offering exclusively, which is a step in this kind of direction. So really, right. all this is going to do is bring the biggest of big, you know, media corporations in line with them, and they're now going to just use that service to put all of that Disney content out to us potentially. Here's the thing. You say Netflix, but that's because that's what we've become accustomed to. Netflix right. was the first to the show. You know, like YouTube was a thing and Netflix was a thing, but YouTube was funny videos and all that kind of stuff. And Netflix was TV shows and movies. But that's changing. I mean, the other big thing that YouTube's done recently is they've embraced streaming. They offer the direct streams now. So you'll actually see, like, if you're somebody like myself who follows a lot of gaming, you'll see content creators for gaming have been shifting away, some of them, not all of them, but some of them have been shifting away from Twitch and streaming through Google. Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, YouTube. Through YouTube. I do.
Or both.
Most of my stuff through YouTube live.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who aren't Twitch partnered yet who stream through both because it allows them to reach, you know, wider audiences. So that's the thing is they've changed their offerings and they've gotten better and better as far as that. But for kids, like the youth, you know, the youth of the Western world, YouTube is the hub for entertainment. Like, there is so much content there. And kids are growing up today, and young adults and college students and even people of my cohort, you know, people in their late 20s and early 30s, frequently go and watch content producers on YouTube more regularly than they watch what's on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. You know what I mean? I am guilty of that. I have missed out on shows that I should be keeping up, you know, keeping tabs on because I'm like, nah, I'll just wait and binge. In the meantime, I'm going to go watch the latest video put out by Rooster Teeth or, you know, whoever with whatever that they're doing, whether it be playing a video game or whether it be doing something completely different, something that's a little more like hard to explain. They do a lot of different stuff. You know, they do shows that are more like games and stuff like that, that aren't actually games, mm-hmm. but like game show E type things, you know.
Oh, so, Rooster Teeth. The easiest thing you ever say is, Machinima, where they
yeah.
did, Halo, right? They did this whole voiceover TV yeah. series with, oh my God, that was the best thing that ever happened.
Well, that's really what made Rooster Teeth
yeah.
a huge media corp. You know, not yeah. they're not a huge media corporation, but they're a huge media outlet. Like, they create a lot of content, and they've brought a lot of other content creators, not all that different from like what we do here at GSTU, where we bring people in our little neck of the woods together under a banner where we can, you know, help each other out and, you know, get that power of unity and everything. But yeah, YouTube is the future and is the now. So any of the, you know, a big company like Disney putting their content on YouTube, even if it's only in like a, you know, like, is that's the distribution platform, no different than how they would handle it through Netflix or something. That's a big step. And the thing is, every phone, every smartphone has YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Every computer can get on YouTube. Most smart TVs have a YouTube app, if not all of them. Right. Every single, you know, modern game console, you know, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, they have YouTube apps. Everything has a YouTube app.
But here's the thing. Now, because we assume when we see Disney, we assume TV, movies, blah, blah, blah. But really, if you look at these bullet points, Disney did invest $1 billion for 1/3 stake in the streaming firm last year.
That's not Google, though. That was a different firm, but yeah.
That was a different firm? Okay. Yeah. Something about the future sports program. If you see, it's direct-to-consumer sports service based on the tech that is set to launch by year's end. We'll have content not on linear ESPN. Mm-hmm. And then you go on but down, and it's talking about Sony, DirecTV, that blah, 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 blah. But then
it
says
comparing
deals
it
with
other.
YouTube and is a bundled service set to launch later this year. So it sounds like they're going to have their own service inside of YouTube,
right,
including ESPN and other ABC TV group networks.
Which is genius.
But it also means that the Marvel stuff is going to stay with Netflix for a good long while.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's the ABC TV group network, so that means that, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could end up on YouTube with the service, you know what I mean? Obviously, this is going to be a bundled service. You're going to have to pay for it. It'll either be tied into YouTube Red somehow, or it'll have its own separate subscription, I'm sure. You know, so that's the thing, is it's... The possibility is there, though, that their TV offerings are going to be available, and if their TV offerings are available, that means that they might... You know, who knows how long the Netflix relationship lasts, because it could change. It could change at any time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, the other side of this, too, is this, as with Disney shows and the CW shows that are now going to Netflix, partnering with YouTube may give them that additional Hulu-esque platform. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can binge after the season is over. It will give you the opportunity to do, you know, day after or whatever. If they're deciding to shift away from Hulu, I don't know why they would.
Yeah,
because they're stakeholders, but it's just another avenue. But the nice thing about the nice thing about YouTube is the size of the net that YouTube casts. It's like Vegas. If you want to find it, it's there. Or Thailand, I guess, would probably be the more appropriate thing. Whatever your weird is, you can go find it. Like, I just spent 5 minutes today watching all of these hashtag Cash Me Outside music videos that I cannot stop looking at. And I don't know why. It's just people with this song that's been made up about that horrible Dr. Phil girl, and they're like just do little dances to it. And they're not any longer than a minute or two.
Right. Well, yeah, you remember the what was that flash mob thing that was real popular like 2-3 years ago?
Flash mob?
The Harlem Shake, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, how many videos were uploaded of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, and then the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Ice Bucket Challenge, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's tons of stuff.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying is it does nothing but bring people in. So you're dumb if you're not trying to get your properties on
Right, because this is the future of what's probably going to happen. You're going to watch like a dumb cat video or something else, you know, like a Harlem Shake type video, the latest, you know, super insane social media thing. And then there's going to be an ad that runs for, you know, some Disney thing that's offered through the Disney package. And you're going to be like, oh, well, I like that thing. And you're going to go click that sub button. You know what I mean? You're going to go click that sign up button. And the next thing you know, this is as big. I honestly think that YouTube right now is probably as important to the future of the internet and content distribution as Windows was to getting PCs in everybody's home.
Maybe, yeah. It's definitely the second largest search engine in the world. First being, of course, Google.
YouTube. I use Bing, sir.
What?
Well,
why
pray for you.
Why would you ever use Bing?
Because I support Jonah Ray. I support him.
Oh, God.
Hex?
Yeah. Charles, YouTube is part of Google.
No, I know. But if you separate it as two entities, literally the way the statistics work is Google is the number one search engine. YouTube, because you can search separately on YouTube itself.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. That's the way it works out.
I mean, if you look at
that's all I'm saying. But when you're listening to these things, I see it from two different ways. Okay, and let me spout it out real quick and show my ignorance, and you can correct me. But I see not YouTube as a flash in the pan, but the videos you're talking about, they're flash in the pans. Who looks up Harlem Shake now? Who looks up Ice Bucket Challenge now? These are viral things that YouTube was the platform for, but nobody cares. It's not a longevity platform. However, I can see the business model because they have perfected their copyright algorithms for companies to use, and they know how to do ads and really not only make money for the companies with ads, but to get them in front of active consumers. So on a business side, I can see the value of the platform, but as a consumer, I'm going, I don't see this as a longevity platform.
Here's the problem with calling all of these things flash in a pan, because then you're just talking about a series of degrees. Who honestly watches Dallas anymore, or The Fall Guy, or Alf?
I still don't know who shot JR.
Right. So, but I mean, you're talking about cultural landmarks in television history. So you're just talking about a matter of degrees here.
But you're also talking about, with those specific examples, or Pacific if you're in California.
Yeah, but you just mentioned, okay, so like you're like, mm-hmm. Who's watching Harlem Shake anymore? Nobody. But where did they watch it? YouTube. Who's watching Ice Bucket Challenges? Nobody. But where did they watch it?
YouTube. Yeah. Who's watching Daredevil? Somebody. And where do they watch it? Netflix.
Right. Only because technically right now that stuff's not available on YouTube, though it probably
I feel like we're in a protest. Who's watching Daredevil? Nobody. Where do they watch it? Netflix.
No, but I mean, this is the thing. YouTube has the most eyes on it of any service, period. Like, there are way more people watching YouTube every day than there are people watching Netflix, Hulu, probably Netflix and Hulu combined. Throw in Amazon, you know, like all of them. It's not even close to the amount of eyeballs that are pointed directly at YouTube content every single day. And you talk about, you know, these trends, flash in the pan type stuff. They might come and go and they fade, but where do they emerge from, and where do they live? It's on YouTube.
The depths of hell.
Well, like Gangnam Style. How huge was Gangnam Style? Mm-hmm. That song was insane. Okay. Absolutely insane for more than a year. YouTube. Mm-hmm. I saw that video on YouTube when there was like 20 to 50,000 views, you know, like it had just hit. People were just starting to talk about how crazy it was. And then like a week later, it had millions. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. I mean, I absolutely think it's a great creator platform. I'm not disagreeing. I just haven't been sold on it's the platform to distribute, or I guess I'm having a hard time seeing what Disney's seeing and what you're seeing is all I'm saying.
I think it's just a lack of that's not where you've gone. You know what I mean?
It could be. You could be absolutely right on that.
And I think part of that, too, is that delivery system is still fairly fluid. Because if you look at how Netflix delivers things, it's the same way that Hulu delivers things. It's the same way that mm-hmm. all of these other streaming services deliver it. YouTube is not quite that way. It's different Agreed. Enough. Yeah. And it's still, and its delivery system still hasn't, it changes.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. They got the tech, they got the power.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, they do have the backing of the biggest tech company on the planet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, they're going to brand that wall for Mexico YouTube wall.
No, they won't, because they're not going to be able to get any high-tech employees in.
enough of the horrible jokes here. But, you know, what is awesome, and something we mentioned every show, is Loot Crate. We are still rolling up our sleeves and getting ready to put together the best franchises, because February's theme is Build. It features Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Batman, Lego Dimensions, and Tetris. And as always, it has a monthly t-shirt and pin. You've got until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, so roughly about a week after this episode has been aired, to subscribe and receive this month's crate, and then it's all over. So make sure you head to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code giant-size-team-up to save some money off your subscription. And it just hit me. Lego Batman also had spots through the Super Bowl. It had spots like on Everywhere. Lego Batman's got spots everywhere. Maybe that's the Batman in the box.
Yeah, I had one of our female fans message me and reminded me that she saw Batman vs. Superman and Ben Affleck's built. So that's probably where the build's coming from.
Message our page. Email us. We'd love to hear from the female fans.
Well, I really meant Travis, but I don't want to put him off the line.
Oh, off the top rope.
He's oh, wait. Here comes Chris with a steel chair. Oh, my gosh.
He's not getting up. He also can't defend himself, but he's not getting up.
Nothing but love for the Blazing Defender.
I felt the impact of that one, and I'm just in the audience. Holy crap. We are working. Just since we dropped this in, we are definitely working on having him back on the show. I miss Travis being on and the back and forth we have. All right. Now, Chris, I brought this headline to the table. However, you have more information about it, so I'll read the headline, and then you can tell us what we need to know about it. Marvel Studios, this is the headline from Gizmodo, which is IO9, Gizmodo's respectable site, typically. Marvel Studios is perfectly okay with this villain problem. And I read through it, and I really want to talk about how we feel about the villain problem. But first, let's talk about how news is interpreted, and because you read the actual interview or something like that, didn't you, Chris?
Yeah, I read another article just today. I'd read another article. So it's got the same excerpts of Kevin Feige's quotes. And I think the title is clickbaity to me because that's not what he says anywhere. So nowhere in this will you see words where Kevin Feige says we're fine with our villain problem. Where I think they're extrapolating that from is back during when Iron Man 2 released. It released up against the Dark Knight Returns. Dark Knight Returns. And The Dark Knight, sorry.
Yeah.
And when they were looking at it, The Dark Knight was very focused on the Joker and the villain, whereas Marvel movies were always focused on the hero. And Kevin Feige, he said, yes, we don't use the villains properly because we use them to service the hero story versus servicing themselves and maybe the total story. And
there's a little quote here, but it could be out of context. But the little quote is, from Feige. Yeah, we focus on the heroes. We don't mind that. We like that.
Right.
Which with your adding surrounding context sounds different than just, we don't care about
that. Well, because, I mean, that's the beginning of that paragraph. In 2008, two superhero movies came out, Feige said, referring to Marvel Studios' first film, Iron Man, and The Dark Knight. One focused on the villain, one focused on the hero, and we at Marvel looked at them like, yeah, we focus on heroes, we don't mind that, we like that. So this is where they were. This is where their focus was in 2008. So for this article that released yesterday or whenever to say that they're okay with their villain problem.
About 8 years later.
Yeah, clickbaity.
Okay, so you know me. I try to stay out of the details of films. I want to go and just experience as much new as possible. But I have a real question. Is Taserface a real bad guy in Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Hey, yes. That's the name he gave him.
Taserface. Okay.
So to kind of chime in on this, the criticism gets lobbed at Marvel a lot about their villains, but what he said here is a really important distinction. That's how comics work, right? Like, are the villains in most comic books not just set pieces to tell the story of the hero? There's exceptions.
There are, and I think, but what you're looking at, and I think this is a good microcosm of maybe the progression for me with BVS and the DCEU isn't necessarily that they tried to go for the team flick first, but what Marvel has done is almost the way you look at comics: Golden Age, Silver Age, Modern Age, right? So in the Golden Age, absolutely, you're right, 100%. That's what the comics were. The villain was simply there to give the hero struggles. Is that classic hero versus villain?
Yep.
Didn't really service the story past that. But then as you evolve, and Dr. Doom and Lex Luthor probably are the two that really started to evolve into something more, and Joker as well. It wasn't always just to pit the hero against something. Dr. Doom especially, because his lines really started to blur earlier because he was the ruler of Latveria, and so you get to earlier on they give him other story versus I'm just here to be evil and be the nemesis of the Fantastic Four. It's I'm doing this because this would serve Latveria.
Mm-hmm. Kingpin. Okay, so but compare Kingpin, Spider-Man universe, right, versus the Sinister Six or the Wrecking Crew, where I would absolutely say the Wrecking Crew was servicing the hero story, whereas Kingpin has his own. He didn't start off that way. I think he started off differently, but he absolutely became on storytelling level with the Joker or Doom or whatever. But yeah, if you throw out Wrecking Crew or a lot of lower level villains, even the Vulture, right? You're like, okay, it's a Monster of the Week story.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, that's the thing is too. Like we're talking about some of the arch villains here. You know what I mean? When you talk about a Doctor Doom, a Kingpin, these are people. It was kind of represented quite well in Daredevil, the TV show. Kingpin's role, you know, like he's a crime boss. But they serve a purpose. You know what I mean? Like, they're doing bad stuff. Don't get me wrong. They're not saints. He's not a hero. You know what I mean? But he is trying to push his city in a certain direction. That's a complicated story. You know what I mean? Like, and he's trying to keep the Yakuza out and the Triad and all that. You know what I mean? There's a function that's being served. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like it, you know, it copies the real life mafia. You know what I mean? Like, for all the bad things that the mafia has done, people in those communities will always tell you, though, they locked down a lot of communities and they took care of people. They made sure people didn't get taken advantage of. And that's a thing that actually about the Yakuza right now in Japan, like if you explore that topic, it's a really interesting topic because like the low part of the Yakuza is your foot soldiers. There's a lot of like random like muggings and stuff like that. That's bad. But when you go up the chain, it's all really well thought out, well articulated plans where it's like, no, we keep, you know, our area legit. You know what I mean? We make sure that things happen. You know what I mean? We make sure that you don't get mugged on the way home. You might in the outskirts someplace, but in the major cities, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things where like, it's a complex story. And so then when you take a hero versus villain approach to it, it gets muddy real quick. You know what I mean? Especially when you talk about somebody like Doom, whose, you know, motivations aren't, they're selfish, but they're not selfish in the, I just want personal gain. He has people that he is beholden to, you know, that he, in that classic, you know, sire vassal role, like he serves that function. And I think we're starting to see that though. Like we're starting to see that in the MCU now, particularly with Civil War, you know, we're starting to see villains who like people kind of dumped on Zemo, but he was fine. Like Zemo was like, I object to what's going on here with these people, these superpowered people, you know what I mean? And I'm going to turn them on themselves. You know what I mean? And that's the other thing is, you know, you start talking about your Silver Age and your Modern Age, you start to see the team dynamics become more important than they were in the Golden Age. You know what I mean?
Well, and something that we're getting a little taste of in Guardians 2, but is really a running theme throughout all of, at least Marvel and their history, is the... Sometimes the bad guy is not always the bad guy. Sometimes the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Sometimes there is a reformation, right? So we get Yondu, who is teaming up with the Guardians. And Yondu is one of the antagonists, if not the bad guy. He was an antagonist in Guardians 1. And when I went back and read the Guardians and saw how they changed Ronan so much for the film, I mean, he really epitomizes that in the comics of this series. He's the bad guy. He's Ronan the Accuser. He's coming after Star-Lord, coming after whoever. He's the bad guy. But then this series happens and things have changed, and now they need Ronan, and Ronan needs them, and he's teaming up with them. He's not necessarily a good guy,
right?
But he needs them, and we're not getting that in the cinematic universes.
Well, and I think the problem with Ronan between the comics and the movie is, when you look at Ronan in the comics as a bad guy, it's because you're looking at it through the Guardian's point of view. Mm-hmm. You look at it through the Kree point of view.
Right.
He's not a bad guy at all.
Right. But in the movie, they made him this religious zealot where everybody thought he was crazy.
No, right. But you, right. You know, you can't even look at that from the Kree perspective. When in the movie, they talk about the Kree coming to accord.
Right.
Coming to accords. Then you just have this extremist.
Exactly. So
there's nothing redeeming about him in that movie.
Right.
And he wouldn't even dance, you know?
I do think we're moving in that direction, though. I think you're starting to see more of it. I think Civil War is going to be the crutch of that, I think. I think that's going to be the big turning point where things are going to get shaken up at the team levels. You know what I mean? That event is going to have impact through the rest of the world, setting, you know what I mean? And so it's going to be, we're going to get confronted with some of these more complex villains as we go. Cause he talked about in Guardians of the Galaxy 1, how they needed Ronan to just unite the Guardians. Well, now we don't need that so much anymore because they're a team. You know what I mean? And that's what's going on with Civil War. It's like, well, the Avengers are a team. They've had a couple films now where they've come together. They've faced the bad guys. They've overcome. They've added some more team members. Now they've added a whole lot more team members, and people they can rely on. I mean, we're getting quite a diverse cast of characters with different motivations, and things are getting complex, like Winter Soldier is a perfect, Winter Soldier's a villain. Let's be real. Like, we're rooting for him because he's Bucky, and we know that. But he has been presented as a villain at different points throughout the story. But he's also also a villain that is a villain only because he doesn't have complete control of himself and his memories. Not all that different than, say, Wolverine, when Wolverine goes berserker and just, like, when something happens and he goes off the rails, he's not a hero anymore. I mean, how many times in the comics has Wolverine overstepped and it's been like, well, you're not a good guy anymore, like AVX, like AVX event where he's like, I'll kill her, he's like, I'll murder her because it's what I have to do, and it's like, that's crazy, that's one of our guys, that's the guy we rally behind all the time. So there is the complexity there, and it's, I think people just have to be willing to look for it. And Hydra is a lot of throwaway guys. I mean, let's be real. They're that.
Except for Bob.
I mean, they're that classic, though. Hydra is a golden age organization. Those characters are golden age characters. They have almost always singular motivations. You know what I mean? Where Zemo was not that traditional. You know what I mean? And I liked that a lot. I love the way they played Zemo, where he was just, a vigilante, basically. Like, he was like, I got you. You destroyed my life inadvertently. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't come after me personally, but your actions ruined me. And so now I'm going to make you pay. Subsequently, Tony's going to respond to what happened in that film with, hey, Bucky, you didn't come after me personally, but you ruined me. You know what I mean? And so it's going to be. Chris.
It's weird that we can find and celebrate that in a Frank Castle character. But then when presented with that same set of circumstances, but he goes to the other side of the coin, then people crap all over Zemo. Now, and it's like we talked about on a couple of shows ago, I definitely think that the way they are so willing to kill off villains versus bringing them back, that is a problem. That's even more so a problem than making them less sympathetic. But out of Guardians, how easily could we have imprisoned Ronan and had him for a later film, just like we have Nebula?
Yeah, and Ronan is such a evoking character. You know what I mean? Like, he's so he is such a presence. And Lee Pace destroyed that role. You know what I mean? Like, he just rocked it.
Yeah.
And I am sad that we're never going to see him again. You know what I mean?
And I wouldn't say never, because we're about to roll into Infinity Gauntlet. Who knows what Thanos will do?
Right, he was more or less obliterated by the gem, not necessarily killed, which kind of means he could be pieced back together with the right powers.
Well, I mean, you got the reality gem; you can do what you want.
Yeah. But as a whole, we have addressed on this show before that we feel like Marvel and Marvel Cinematic has throwaway villains. I do like that they focus on their heroes, but can we not keep a good villain and have them come back again at some point? I mean, that was the crux of the Batman Joker relationship, was if you just killed him, you would have saved so many countless lives, right? But it's this real inner war of, do I cross that line and kill Joker, and what does that mean for me, or do I just keep doing the good fight and he keeps getting out? And I mean, I think that's a struggle I like to see. And we just don't get that in MCU. Well, we don't get that in DCU either.
We don't even get sympathetic heroes in DCEU, dude. Come on.
Every episode, cha-ching, 0 days since a BVS reference have gone by the GSU. But yeah, you know, it's going to be a discussion that goes on. It is indeed. Now, we did have one bit of business news that we talked about. We got another one here, which I find interesting, because I am definitely personally interested in how the business behind everything runs and how some decisions are made. Bob, is it Iger? I would say Iger. Yeah, cool. I would have said it right. Awesome. He has been the CEO of Disney for a while now. He oversaw the acquisition of Pixar, Marvel, and Lucasfilm. And originally, he was supposed to retire in, if I read it right, 2015, due to how the contract was written. And then it got pushed to 2016, and then pushed again. And now, even though he's still supposedly poised to retire, he has said that he'll do what's best for the company. And he's technically still set to retire in 2018, but Disney has yet to find somebody to take over for him. I do find that interesting. That I'm glad that somebody who can lead a company as well as he seemingly has really stayed with it and is dedicated to his craft. But what do you think will happen when he finally pulls the trigger? Is that something that scares you guys for the future of what we've been seeing? Or is that something that we think we can just weather the bump in the road and keep going?
Well, I think probably what will happen is, in what were they saying, 2018, did they give a month? I'll probably just go ahead and pull the sword from the stone and take over for him.
nice. Although I think Klotz is ahead of line than you are.
I honestly think that I think that's why he's sticking around. Basically they haven't found the right person. When they do, things will move. You know what I mean? Like that. Then a date will get set. They'll groom the new person. They'll start doing the transitionary stuff, and then it'll happen. There's no reason to suspect that things won't, you know, move in the right direction at the right time.
You know, and I wonder, from two of their latest acquisitions, and I say latest, you know, within the last half decade, I mean, both Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy, and I'd probably lean more towards Kathleen. But, and I understand they have their own houses that they're keeping in order, but still, I don't see how they're not on the short list.
They might be. I mean, we definitely don't know what the short list is. So, but I got to applaud. I do have to applaud a leader who, instead of putting his personal interests ahead of everything, says, you know what? I believe in what we've created. I believe in what we've done. And until we find the right person to hand this off to, I'll stick with it for as long as it's good for the company.
So you like leaders that just can't relinquish control? Is that what you like? You're in for a good despot.
I like despots who keep their freaking subordinates at bay with whips and guns. You know, that's all I'm saying. Because, you know, I kind of, the more you talk, the more I start thinking dictatorships kind of work. They kind of do okay. All right, we got some awesome stuff to talk about and more jokes and more fun stuff coming on right after this, so stay tuned. And here we are back. Now, we've got one last big headline to hit, but before we do that, we were in a discussion before the show about binge-watching and about how things are delivered, and we were talking about how Legion's coming on tonight, right? As of the recording, Legion will air tonight. By the time you hear this, it'll be a couple days after it aired. And I mentioned, man, I personally have been binge watching since you first could, when DVD sets came out, and it really wasn't a cultural thing. People looked at me weird, like, what? You're not watching Sopranos week to week? Like, no, I'm getting the DVDs, and I can watch a whole season in like 2 weeks, and it's just a whole different experience. And I wanted to discuss with you guys your personal feelings on binge watching versus keeping up. Right now with CW, because of the show that we do and how I like to listen to other shows as well, I try my best to keep up with those shows. But Chris, you wanted to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a little bit, and you can definitely give your thoughts on it. But I was like, well, I'm 2 weeks behind. Klotz is, I think, even further behind because.
Oh yeah, I am definitely.
But you know what you're not behind on? The Expanse, because it was bingeable. You watched it all, probably very quickly, like I did. So where do we personally fall on binge watching versus keeping up?
There's two things going on, I think, with this topic. You know what I mean? If you watch week to week, you get to participate in that social experience, right? Like, yes. Especially if you have somebody at work, like if you can get into the water cooler stuff, you know what I mean? Like, Walking Dead is huge for this. You know, everybody who watches Walking Dead, they're like, oh my God, this happened, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's very common. And it's a social construct. It's a social experience built into viewing in that way, and that can't be discredited. You know what I mean? If that's something you want to do, that's really, really powerful. You know what I mean? Especially like if you get into the hardcore side of it, where like there are people who do the live tweeting / live live conversations on like Reddit and Facebook and stuff like that in groups and stuff. You know, so you can really build that up to be quite the experience. Now, for me, we watch so many shows for this show, you know what I mean? Because it all falls under our umbrella, that there gets to be a point where I'm like, I just need to take a break. I get worn out, you know what I mean? And so what will happen, though, is like you'll see something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a great example. New season comes. They jump right into it with Ghost Rider. I'm there. So I watch the first week. I watch it the next morning. Then the next week, I watch it the next morning. And then I'm like, all right, the new novelty of the new is kind of wearing off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this story's really kind of still, it's still spinning wheels, you know what I mean? And I don't really love that. And so I kind of slow down. And then I know things have happened since then. But because each episode wasn't very impactful, and I was already starting to fade on my dedication to the show, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to wait and I'll just binge it later. Because it's easier for me to be like, all right, you know, Sunday afternoon, yeah, I'm just going to sit here and watch, you know, 8 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that.
Right.
So that's the thing about that is it's like, all right, there's that. But the other part of binging is like, you talk about The Expanse. I discovered The Expanse because I was sick a few weeks ago, actually a little more than a month ago now, and I posted to Facebook. I was like, all right, I'm not feeling great. I don't really want to get out of bed. Everybody give me something to look up on new Hulu or Netflix. And I got a ton of suggestions. Some of them, many of them I'd already seen. I was like, yeah, rock on. You know, I've been there. But then The Expanse was one of those that was like, somebody was like, the sci-fi, it's awesome. Check it out. It's, you know what I mean? So I checked it out, and that first episode hooked me. And my roommate watched it with me, and we sat there, and we like, all right, let's watch 2. And we were good about this show, because normally when we get hooked by like something like Man in the High Castle, we were like, let's watch 5. And now it's 4 in the morning, and we should go to bed. You know, stuff like that. But like, we watched a couple, and then the next day we watched a couple, and then the next day we watched a couple, and we binged, but we binged over a week or two, and we watched them in clumps, you know what I mean? Because it's an hour-long show.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that regard, you know, it was just a new experience. It was really exciting. It had this whole, it's like picking up a good mystery. Cause that is a big part of that show is it's a mystery. You know, a lot of other shows pretend that they have mystery on them, but they don't, you know, it's
right.
It like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is one of those shows where I'm like, this isn't mystery. This is Deus Ex Machina BS. Cause they're always just like one-upping. You know what I mean? Like they're like presenting a story going along a certain track, and then they're just like, nope, we changed the game, and that's no longer what's going on. That I find jarring, and I don't really love. And it's one of the criticisms I had for Arrow and for Flash. Occasionally, Flash is pretty good about staying within its, you know, its trajectory, even though it has all the timey wimey
stuff. And that's the thing that will come out in binging. Right. I mean, you mentioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and personally, I watched every episode week to week as it came on Hulu because I wanted it to work. I'm in love with Coulson. I wanted the whole storyline to work. And as I look back, I mean, there's so many forgettable moments that I have indeed forgotten that I can think of going, man, if I binged watch this, I probably would have quit halfway through. But watching it week to week, I can forget the cheesy missteps. and go, oh, well, I'll see Coulson this week, and hopefully they'll do something better, right? And it is just enough there to keep me going week to week, but if I binged it, I'd lose it. Whereas, like, Supergirl, I would catch parts of it at the bar. We had this conversation many shows ago where I thought it just looked so cheesy and so stupid. Well, Supergirl actually benefited, in my opinion, from binging to catch up, going, okay, yeah, I can look over the missteps, but I don't have a week to dwell on it. I'm going to the next episode right now, and I can see the strengths and just keep building on the strengths. Chris, what do you think about binging versus keeping up?
It's hard because I was a latchkey kid, right? So, like when you're talking TV, that's definitely my wheelhouse. So,
I'm sorry your wife doesn't let you in when you get home.
Right off the bat, the benefit to watching week to week versus the biggest negative for binging is the immediacy with which you are out of material. So there's a difference between I've decided I've never watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. today. I'm going to go binge four seasons now. So I've got four seasons of catch up versus Sneaky Pete. There's, what, 10 episodes of Sneaky Pete. I'm already done with it. And now I've got to wait until season two. At least if it was week to week, at least I would have gotten 10 weeks of excitement versus 3 days.
And so
that becomes a problem for me. It's like, God, I really wish I could. I want more, but now my wait is even longer than it normally would have been. Now there are definitely shows like, for me, Gotham and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are two of those that I'll let two or three stack up in the queue, and then I'll just catch up on them real quick. But like, I never miss Flash, I never miss Arrow. The main reason I don't ever miss Arrow is because if I start letting that stack up, I'll look at it and be like, probably not gonna catch up.
Yeah, you're like, give up.
So, but the CW shows, I'm pretty religious on weekly, and if not the morning after the day, or it doesn't go past 2 days. But there are a few that I'll let stack up two or three in the queue before I go binge them. And for me, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the last couple episodes have really kind of turned a positive corner for me this season. The big thing on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the last two episodes, they brought the Kanings back. And, you know, anytime Agent Kaning and bros are in, you know, it's a good day. Like,
Daisy stepped on the line, so we took a cane and beat her with it.
No. I got me some Patton Oswalt, so I was happy.
Oh, yeah. He's always great. I'm torn a little bit between the only show I really watch religiously week to week, Supernatural. It hooked me early on. I've actually watched like the first six or seven seasons multiple times because, you know, I watched it as it happened, and then I'd meet somebody who hadn't seen it who'd be interested, and I watched it with them, and it's happened multiple times, so on and so forth. But other than that, it's the binge of it all. The two arguments I hear is you're binging, you get your satisfaction, and like you said, Chris, it's all now, and now I have to wait that much longer. And I do get that. I got that with Sopranos when I first started doing all this stuff, and then caught up to the current seasons and had to wait week to week. Now, after you've binged four or five seasons and you're caught up and you're watching, that is worse. That is way worse than when a series is possibly over or easier to manage. However, the other argument I hear is you don't get that excitement, right? You don't get the, well, you definitely don't get the social aspect of the water cooler or your podcasts or those kind of things. But the examples I've written here is The Magicians and The Expanse. I'm watching The Magicians every episode, not looking at Netflix to see how many are left, but just watching through it. And every episode is just oh my God, I can't wait till the next episode. That's just how they wrote the show. And it keeps that mystery and suspense every time. And when I got to the last episode, Nick, instead of going, hey, watch this next episode, it went, hey, you might like this other thing. I was devastated because there was no finale. None. It didn't finish anything. And I was like, holy crap, that's kind of awesome. Expanse was the same way. Apparently, there's only 10 episodes in Expanse, and I'm just trucking along, knowing I'm on episode 10, thinking there's at least 13 to 16 episodes. Nope. The Expanse ends. No finale. Nothing gets wrapped up. It's all set up. It's like, ooh, they discovered this thing, and I want to follow it.
Whoa. They definitely wrapped up one of the storylines.
I would say the wrap-up was more of a pointing you in a solid direction, as whereas before there was an amorphous direction.
There was a definite completion to a thread in that story, if you follow me. I don't want to spoil it for anybody at home. But there's a definite conclusion to one of the mysteries. Now, it does offer a whole bunch of other mysteries that spring out of that.
So maybe I'm springing off into that. But but that's my thing is, what have we been taught as consumers? We're taught everything's bundled into a season, right? Everything is tied off in the season. And then next season, we start with something new. And I'm loving it. I'm not hating on it. I'm loving that The Expanse and The Magicians didn't do that. And even Daredevil, love Daredevil. And by the time I had finished it, they announced that they already greenlit Daredevil 2, season 2, and had you move some schedules around for that. But I still had to wait. Mm-hmm. But I'm okay with that, Chris, because I will find something else to manage. Because I'm with you, man. Sneaky Pete, I was disappointed when I saw there's only 10 episodes. And while I haven't finished it yet, partially I'm savoring it. Partially is because I watch it with the wife, and there's only so much time we have together, like Klotz, you and your life partner, roommate, there. So
what?
Did I just slightly sorry? I mean, he's a beautiful man. Took care of you when you're sick, you know.
What?
What?
Awkward.
I'm just messing around. No, but seriously, what? Good friends are good friends, right? So relationships are relationships. All I'm saying is, you want to experience the show with somebody else. And so
are slower. Yeah. There's definitely some shows that are like, I want to watch this with somebody else. I want that social experience of watching it with somebody. So, because watching The Expanse together, we were able to turn to each other and be like, what the what? Like, what just, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, in that regard, it's awesome. You know what I mean? But yes. Then there are other things, like I'll watch stuff that like I don't think other people are particularly interested in that are my friends and stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'll just be like, I'll just watch that on my own. You know what I mean? And that's fine. So yeah, no, it's all over the place. It's like, it really depends.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was Sneaky Pete. Without ruining everything, is there so many opportunities for the TV cheese drama moment that it seems like so much of the TV watching public loves? And they don't do it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's some cheese. Don't get me wrong. There's a little bit of cheese in there. A little bit of a TV moment. But at the end of each episode, it comes down to a moment that could be that TV, what are they doing now, cheese moment. And it's just solid. And it's good. I remember turning to my wife going, oh, my God, that was so good. What he just did right there in the credits roll, that was so good. And that's what you're talking about a little bit, Klotz. But I got to tell you, my personal stance on it, I hate keeping up. I hate Powerless. Okay, Powerless came on. I'm a huge fan of three of the main actors, so wanted to watch it as soon as it came on. Okay. It was okay. It made me laugh at spots. It's enough for me to check out the next episode. But I will tell you, I would probably enjoy it more if I could just watch the whole season right now. You know? Parks and Recreation was one that the general public went crazy for. I checked it out on Keeping Up TV, you know, live TV, whatever. Watched an episode, went, nope. But then it came to Hulu. I binge-watched 6 or 8 episodes before I went, I see why people like it. It's just not for me. Go ahead.
I hate
waiting, because if it's good, like you said, Sneaky Pete, Expanse, those shows, if it's good, I want to get the next part. And I love that I got to the end of it, and I was a little heartbroken. I was a little like, oh, my God, it's ending. I'm scared right now. I'm going to tell you, boys, I'm scared right now. I've got Syfy now, which is the app for sci-fi. And I watched the first episode of The Magicians, picked right up, loved it. And I noticed it says streaming episodes 1 and 2 now. But they should be on episode 3 by now. I'm like, are you screwing with me? Are you letting me get the first 2 episodes on your app and then nothing? Because that will piss me off. Because I would have just waited. But I started watching it because it's on now. And I can follow it, and I really am hooked into it. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. But that is something I think we can all agree, the bait and switch, where they're only going to put 1 or 2 episodes online and then you have to wait. That's I hate that. Hate that one. Apparently I'm the only one, so we'll move on.
I'm still, I'm still befuddled at the not for me comment on
Parks and Recreation. It just, I don't know. I just, it never quite clicked for me. Not everything's for everybody, Chris.
Wait. No, I get it. But when you juxtapose that with you not liking the British Office, and you're like, oh, okay, you're a Parks and Rec guy. And now you're like, I'm not a Parks and Rec guy. And I'm like, what are you?
Chaotic neutral, baby. Chaotic class.
How?
You said you
how are you not a Parks and Rec person? Are you judging it based on the first season? Because the first season is real bad. Everybody knows.
Yeah, that. I watched things in order. So I did about 8 to 9 episodes of the first season.
Parks and Rec is one of those weird beasts where it started off pretty weak.
Okay.
It has a similar trajectory to The Office, the U.S. Office. The U.S. Office was really funny early on because it's so cringeworthy and everything, you know what I mean?
Right.
And carried by Steve Carell. But like... Yeah. By the midpoint of the series and then well into the late parts of the series, it's no longer just the cringe comedy that's getting you into it. It's like, I actually care about these characters.
Like, yeah.
This world is completely absurd, and this is like not real life. At least not this much shenanigans happens in real life.
Yeah.
But, and that's the thing is Parks and Rec is very much the same. It's like, first season is real rough. It's real.
Okay.
But then second season... kind of hits a stride, like, and it's kind of the story of Andy Dwyer, you know I mean, like, he started out on the show to be a foil to Anne, you know, he started out to be the deadbeat boyfriend, and he was gonna just go away at the end of the first season, but then they worked him into something more and more incredible as each season went on, you know what I mean, and he became that lovable idiot that just, like, he's one of the reasons you tune in week to week. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, Parks and Rec is a show that's real rough to get into initially. Because I, for a long time, was like, I tried watching, it took me 2 sit-throughs on the first season to get into the stuff that it was like, all right, oh, wow, this is great. And you know what really pulled me in? Ron Swanson content hitting Reddit and stuff.
He
like
is good.
People referencing that stuff. And I was like, wow, that clip I just watched is so funny. You know what I mean? Like, so insanely... It's kind of like Community, actually. Community is another show that's like that, too. Community was not something that really hit my radar and I cared about until a friend of mine made me watch the first D&D episode. And I sat down and watched that. And, like... And, you know, I was like, what? This is amazing. This show is great. And I watched a bunch of other... And I was like, oh, man, this show is awesome. It's relatively short form, and it does its thing. It's got its flaws, but it's really fun, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of those... It's definitely one of those shows that's like... It makes it real hard to get in initially, but once you do, it's worth it.
All right, well, then I'll try the second season. But that is the case. I take things chronologically as they were produced.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I watched the first season, and about 8 episodes in, I'm like, I just don't care anymore.
Yep.
So, with that recommendation, I can try it again.
The second season on... is when things really... And by the third season, it's a completely different show.
Now, I was a fan of Joel McHale from The Soup before, mm-hmm. long before he got Community. And so I watched the Community for him and ultimately liked some of the characters, didn't like the other characters. But like you said, as it developed, I liked all the characters.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, by the end of it. Or by the time it went to Yahoo, and then I kind of lost track of it after that.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But there's that. So we've got 2 more things here. Chris, I believe you put this in. Wolverine's coming back from the dead. Who knew?
Possibly. So Bleeding Cool has hopefully gotten first to punch on this. And the site says that after speaking with Marvel, says that Marvel is taking time to line up a big name talent, new and old, across the board for a series of big titles in 2018 to be created well in advance to avoid the shipping issues that can often cause such in-demand creators. So what they're trying to do is get a whole bunch of stuff in the can so that there won't be release issues that we always seem to run into, where they've got Mega Artist A or Mega Writer A, and they get 3 issues into a 12-issue arc, and then we're waiting, you know, months between so they can finish a book.
Shocking news, though. Jeff Johns is jumping ship to write this book.
No. But as a little tidbit that is mentioned later is, as part of Marvel's meat and potatoes in the comics, you'll be getting Wolverine back too. So what this is all kind of leading up to, and I saw an article yesterday which I didn't link because it was pretty bad,
but there's talk of DC, of Marvel kind of going the DC Rebirth route and trying to get heroes back to what they were. And I don't know that they're going to do it at the detriment of the heroes that have come to replace them, but I think we're going to see classic heroes back in place. Because I am of the mind, seeing, you know, Beta Ray Bill for years and Thor, seeing how well the Thor Corps worked in Secret Wars, there's a place for more than one Thor. There's a place for Jane Foster Thor as well as Thor Odinson. There's a place for Logan Wolverine just as well as there's a place for X-23. So
I feel you on that, but come on, man. I'm with you, I agree. But this, a Rebirth thing? Like, they just did this. They just did Secret Wars. Like, that was the whole point of that event, right?
Yep.
We're going to shake everything up, and what's going to be left is going to be the good stuff. Well, maybe we better, come on. Dude, I'm sorry. I'm just like, I haven't been following the topic closely, but hearing you talk about that, I am so pissed right now. It's just like, this is, you know, frankly, this is why the only money that Marvel gets from me for comics is the subscription.
But it's not, but we've talked about it before. It's not just Marvel that's guilty of this.
No, it's not. But that's, this is, well, DC doesn't get any of my dollars. So, I mean, they get movie tickets out of me. But usually that involves me buying a DVD and getting the movie ticket for free, quote unquote free. That's not to sharpen my axe on this topic here, but like, they cannot continue to do this. You can't have a huge, whole line wide event. This is going to change everything about the face of Marvel. And then a year later, 18 months later, well, we're going to bring everybody back and do a reboot thing again. Even though we said we weren't going to do a reboot after that last reboot that came right on the heels of that other reboot and stuff. I'm sorry. Like, you're wearing out consumer confidence quickly. Man, I don't even know what to say to this. I'm so pissed about this. Like, I'm sorry, but like, I hate to be hyper negative all of a sudden, but it's like, I don't have positive things to say right now. Like, maybe I'll change on that, but it's like, the fact that they're already putting word out that this is going to be a thing so quickly, you know what I mean? Anyways.
We'll see. I mean, it might not. We'll see what happens. But we always knew they're going to bring Wolverine back. Nobody.
Yeah, we dead. Called that with the when we covered the death of Wolverine. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, okay, to provide some context, this show is what, just not even quite 18 months old at this point, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? We covered the death of Wolverine a couple weeks or months into the launch of this show.
Yeah.
And we talked about it then, you know what I mean, and how he would be back. And here we, you know what I mean, here we are less than 2 years later, you know, and it's man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, folks at home, if I got too real for a second, cuz I'm Well,
I don't know if this will cheer you up or stoke the flames. What is this Josh Gad versus Daisy Ridley business?
Okay, so they're on the set of Murder on the Orient Express, right? And there are no less than three videos that I've seen. The newest one, just within the last day or so, has Dame Judi Dench, and he basically just he surprises her. He'll call her in and say, "Hey, I need you to help me with some lines. They've got some new sides." And he ambushes her with these script lines that, to try and get her to tell. Well, so the first time she walked in the room, and he's like, "I need you to answer a question for me. Who's the last Jedi? What's up with Rey?" And so then the next one was, he like wrote some fake sides, said, "Okay, hey, the director just came up with these. He needs us to read through them." And it's like, she's supposed to be answering the questions about what's going on in the script in episode 8. And so the newest one was Judi Dench is sitting in there, and she's like, "Who's the last Jedi? What's up with Rey?" And then she's like, "Why won't you answer my damn questions?" And Ridley's just sitting there, like, she's just got this look on her face, like, "I'm not doing this, Tom." So Josh Gad is an American hero.
That's funny. That, and then, well, Dame Judi Dench is a English hero, man. That she played into it. I mean, what is Daisy really going to do? She is an icon, and she's going, what's up with Ray? I mean, what do you say to that? That's awesome, man. That I do love this generation of talent who is part of YouTube, who is cutting, they cut their teeth on social media and those kind of things, and understand that even as actors, we want to see that side of them, and that he's sharing that stuff. That's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Klotz is a no.
Well, I do have some wrap up stuff if we're
all right. Go ahead. Yeah.
So a couple of things to plug. You guys may remember that we had our good friend Rob Wolinski on a few months ago, where he was doing his Kickstarter for Double A Squad. Just want to let you guys know, obviously, that was successfully funded. Yay.
Good.
And it is right now, digital versions are available on, and I believe physical copies are available as well, too, through his Etsy store, which we'll have a link in the show notes. But it's etsy.com/shop/comicsbyrob. It's a very affordable, $3 for the digital copy. So if you had any interest in that, you didn't get in at the Kickstarter level, go check it out. He sent me the digital version of this comic, and I read it today, and it was a lot of fun. And the only thing I'm super mad about is that I don't know how long it's going to take him to put out more. So, you know, go support Rob over there. And, I mean, it is really sweet. Like, it looks like a comic you would pick up on a comic rack. You know what I mean? It's really well done. The art's great, and the style and the writing's good. I'm really excited to see where he goes with that story. And there's some funny call-outs in there, too. Subtle ones. Another thing I wanted to talk about is another friend of mine is doing a Kickstarter for a board game. It's called Beastmasters, and it's a dice placement game. And this is from Chris Peach, who is the designer at Kid Loves Tiger Games. We'll have a link to this Kickstarter as well. So he's a friend of mine, friend of the show. His company, they make really great family-friendly games. Lots of bright colors, lots of cool components to manipulate, you know, so, and it's all original content that they come up with themselves. So they're a small publishing house putting out really cool, grassroots, tabletop game stuff. So check that out as well. And if it strikes your fancy, give him some support. He's already like well on his way. He's looking to hit, their goal is only, just shy of $5,000, and they've already got 2,600 in there, with 36 backers and 19 days to go as of the recording. Nice. So it'll probably be more like 15 days by the time the show comes out. So yeah, give it a look and see if it's if something you're interested in. All right. And so those are my plugs for the week. And thank you to those guys, because they're supportive listeners of the show and stuff.
That is cool. Now, explain to me, what's the difference between a dice game like D&D, where you roll the dice to progress the game, and you said dice placement game?
Basically, that the dice, like in this kind of a style of game, there are dice that you will place to do things as part of the gameplay. Like, so in D&D, you just roll your dice and you add up the numbers and you see if you hit or do whatever. Whereas in a dice placement game and some other games as well, the dice are the actual components themselves. So like they might represent characters, or they might represent power or something like that. And like once they're rolled, they go to a zone generally, and you use them to do things. So hey, he's got a video on there that you guys can check out to see. He'll, you know, run through some of those details with you.
Cool. If I get 6 in a row or 5 in a row, do I get Yahtzee?
You get to shut the hell up.
I can't even facepalm loud enough through my microphone.
The sonic boom would render this track.
My goal is to, every once in a while, my goal is to get one of the two guys or both to facepalm so hard they knock themselves out. And that would be the highlight of my year.
You know when your parents say that horribly embarrassing thing in front of your friends and you're just like, why are you here? You're not that much older than me, Charles. Why are you... Why do I get that from you? Why do you take me back to that place?
It is my job, sir. It is my job. So you can find us on iTunes. Go ahead and leave a review. Subscribe there. Share it with your friends. We are the flagship show of the Giant Size Team Up Network, giantsizeteamup.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/ Breaking the Panel, we've got new stuff going on that we're about to launch over there. So keep a look at there. Email us, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, @giantsizeteamup.com to have your emails on the show. And of course, at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, you can go right there. You can see all the show notes. You can leave comments on the show notes. Chris writes some excellent stuff. I've actually been digging through, sir, and seeing some of the references. It makes me laugh. You're doing some good work over there. But you can also hit the little tab on the side, leave your voicemail. Any device that has a microphone, it can be your cell phone, it can be your tablet, it can be your computer. If you've got a microphone on it, give access, leave your voicemail, we will play it on the show. And then I guess the only thing left to say is tune in next week to hear Chris say...
Aw, man, you made me do it last week.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.